Big Show Wrestling is variety show, battle royal, pro wrestling, sideshow, burlesque, magic, music, comedy, and more.
All right, bro.
All right, we are here with AJ Kirsch. AJ, welcome to Chair Shot Radio. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, guys. Thank you so much for having me. I'm stoked.
Well, thanks for being here, man. We appreciate it. First and foremost, how's your health doing? I know you're kind of coming off a knee injury, so physically, how are you?
Yeah, physically, I actually feel great. My knee injury aside, a couple weeks ago, I had surgery on my left knee to repair a torn ACL and a torn meniscus, so that's slowed me down a little bit. But you know, I'm used to running as hard as I can, as long as I can. So I think slowing down has actually been good for me. So the PT's going great, feeling better by the day, and you know, I haven't missed a day in the gym, and it's been all upper body. So I'm thrilled.
So you're looking jacked up on top.
exactly. And then with the crutches, it's like a 24/7 arm pump as well. So I can't be mad at it.
So you got the Johnny Bravo going on right now, huh?
Exactly. Yeah.
You're doing what a lot of people don't do, and you're skipping leg day.
I'll be Johnny Bravo.
you're doing the wrong thing, and you're skipping leg day though.
Well, I think I have a pass. Well, also, to be clear, I'm skipping both legs. I'm still working out my good leg, which probably means I'm just going to look ridiculous by the time I'm actually able to work out the other leg.
So you're like the opposite of one of those guys with the arm wrestling contests who have that one jacked arm and the other arm just looks like a limp noodle.
Exactly. Like, one leg, the calf is just monstrous right now because I'm an idiot and don't use my crutches all the time, so I'm like hopping all over my apartment. It's been great for my right calf, but my poor left leg just looks like a It just looks like a sad, useless leg.
You know what you could do, AJ? You know, you remember how back in the day they said Lex Luger had the loaded forearm? He had like the steel plate in his forearm or something like that.
Right.
So you can get your one leg really, really strong, and then that's just your new finishing maneuver. You just literally kick somebody's head off.
Right. Fatality.
Built in new finisher.
We call it the Melon Buster or something like that, you know?
Right.
Now, AJ, you were on Tough Enough a few years back. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. And I believe that season's on the network, too, in case anybody wants to check it out. Although I don't remember if it's technically the fourth season or the fifth season, because one of the seasons was on SmackDown, so I don't even know if that technically counts as a separate season. But it's on there. 2011 is the year. But
okay,
yes,
thank you. So talk a little bit about that whole experience. What was that like?
It was an onslaught of different emotions. First of all, I'm super nervous because I'm training under Stone Cold Steve Austin and Booker T and Trish Stratus and Bill DeMott and just, you know, four performers that I grew up watching, one of which is arguably the greatest WWE superstar of all time. So I was super nervous.
Wow, you think very highly of Bill DeMott, huh?
Professional and make them feel like I belong there. And also just like literally having to remind myself out loud that I wasn't dreaming, because as a fan of pro wrestling since I was 12 years old, so since like early 96, and as somebody whose life goal was at one point to become a WWE superstar, I felt like I had won the life lottery, because I'm, you know, not only those four names that I mentioned, but I'm also getting to pick the brains of John Cena and Bret Hart and Big Show and, you know, just an unbelievable, surreal experience that I'm grateful for every day.
What was your WWE experience like? Because, you know, sometimes a lot of people say that the worst thing for you to do is to get your dream job. because then you actually have to go to it and you see how the sausage is made and yada yada yada. So yeah, how was your, would you say that overall your experience working with WWE was a positive one?
Oh, absolutely. But to be fair, I never really even got to the point where, you know, I was never signed. I was never offered a contract. The most I've done is, you know, maybe a half dozen extra spots here and there whenever they're on the West Coast. So I never really got the full experience of being on the road and dealing with politics and egos and, you know, everything that goes with being a WWE superstar, which, you know, I'm sure some of the most trying travel and just constantly, you know, beating yourself up 4 or 5 nights a week, like that is a grind like no other. So I can't even say that I got an actual sampling of what it's like to be a WWE superstar, but to get that close to it and to see it from the inside out and just to observe how it's done and just all the moving parts, how many different minds and all the hard work that goes into putting in a show was absolutely fascinating, and I would do it all again in a heartbeat.
I imagine that the takeaways from that, like you said, so many people that you got to learn from and talk to and gather information. Can you give me a couple of things that you took away, like the top things you can think of that really helped you as you moved forward into the next phase of wrestling?
Yeah, well, two things. One, I was lucky enough to lock horns and work around with The Rock a little bit when he was the guest trainer on the show. And after he walked up with everybody, and I think at the time there were maybe 5 or 6 contestants left. And the feedback he had for everybody was just, like, relax. Like, everybody just loosen up a little bit, which is, you know, easy for him to say when you're, you know, locking up with The Rock.
Right.
You know, your nerves are going to be running high. But, you know, he was just like, you know, you guys are out there to have fun. So just relax a little bit. You know, make it look like you're working hard, but that doesn't mean you actually have to work hard. As in, like, you want to make it look like the lockup is a struggle, but you don't actually have to make it a struggle. And so from an in-ring perspective, that's something I've tried to keep in mind ever since. But it was actually my promo that I cut on Bill DeMott on episode 8 that got me thinking about what the next stage of wrestling has for me, because it was that promo that helped me realize maybe my contributions to wrestling are more valuable behind a microphone than they are in the ring.
So you're thinking being a manager or something like that, where you can really put guys over and help the other talents?
It wasn't specifically like becoming a manager. Obviously that is a role where the gift of gab comes into play and can make you, you know, as we're seeing with Paul Heyman nowadays, even though that role is not in style, if done well and the performer has that just talent to be able to captivate a crowd, it can still be done. It can be very effective. But I didn't know exactly what the role would be, but I knew between hosting, ring announcing, commentary, managing, you know, there's going to be a role for me in wrestling, even if it's not in the ring. And I didn't stop, you know, I was coming off of Tough Enough in mid-2011. So I was still, you know, I had no desire at that time to wind down my in-ring career, but I was thinking long-term and thinking that, you know, I kind of surprised myself with that promo. It was a risk. And it exceeded even my own expectations. And that's what kind of got me thinking, like, huh, if I want to stick around in wrestling for as long as possible and knowing that my body has an expiration date, I wonder what else I'm capable of. I wonder how else I can surprise myself.
That's a good thinking. I mean, you know, you're thinking ahead of the curve, which is a great thing. Plus, like you said, it's a lot less taxing on your body, which overall that's going to improve your overall quality of life.
Absolutely. And, you know, we've seen a lot of guys who don't take care of themselves during their career and after their career. And, you know, every year I go to the Cauliflower Alley Club reunion in Vegas. And if you're not familiar, Cauliflower Alley Club is a nonprofit that helps out some of the guys that have paved the way for wrestling nowadays. Like, I didn't want to use the term old-timers, but, you know, the guys that are seasoned veterans that may have health issues and just need some help financially. And so I encourage everybody who's listening to go to CauliflowerAlleyClub.org and become a member. You know, some of the greatest names in wrestling are members of this organization. Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Booker T, Stevie Ray, J.J. Dillon's in there, Terry Funk, Jim Ross. All these guys support this organization, and I encourage everybody else to do the same. But I see these guys at Cauliflower Alley Club who have been in the business for years, and just watching them walk just hurt. And I didn't want to be, regardless of how successful I was in wrestling, I didn't want to get to the point where I needed help getting out of a chair.
Yeah, I always use Mick Foley as that comparison whenever you see him walking down the aisle or something for a special Monday Night Raw or something, and you just watch him walk, and my girlfriend always says it too. He just looks like a wounded dog. Like, just can't, something just doesn't look right, and it looks so sad to see some of these guys that walk like that, you know, after all they put on the line to entertain everybody, and then, you know, they got to deal with that at the end of their career.
Right, and I applaud Mick Foley for taking charge of his health and, you know, him doing DDP yoga. I think he's lost like 100 pounds or something within the recent past. So, you know, and I'm sure his body, his knees, his hips, and his ankles, I'm sure, are thanking him for losing that weight. But you're right, it's not easy to watch. And I didn't want to, so I was just like, you know what, I'm going to take whatever precautions I can to continue contributing to wrestling however I can, but just realizing that eventually I'm going to want to scale back the physicality.
So what is the training process like? Because I've always imagined it, you basically just kind of get your ass beat the whole time, and your body eventually just kind of calluses up, and that's the training. I mean, obviously you learn, you know, about the moves and how to do certain moves and psychology and things of that nature, but I just mean bare bones. You just kind of get beat on until your body calluses, and then you can absorb the punishment.
I don't know that I buy the fact that your body calluses.
Okay.
I think you just get better at knowing how to protect yourself, because the body is not built to take the kind of abuse that professional wrestlers take. It's probably among the most punishing forms of performance art out there. Just physically exhausting. Just, you know, I mean, you're not meant to hurl yourself at the canvas regardless of how much give there is or regardless of the padding underneath you. So I don't think your body, you ever really get completely used to it. You just get used to when to touch your chin and when to breathe out and when to slap the canvas and how to angle yourself in midair so that when you do hit the canvas, you don't kill yourself. As far as training goes, you know, if you're listening to this and you're thinking about becoming a professional wrestler, the best thing you can do right off the bat before you even step foot in a wrestling school is make sure you're in shape, like cardio shape. Like, run, do squats, do burpees, and do them until you can't do them anymore, and then do them some more the next day. Because if you show up and you're not in shape, you're going to want to quit after the first day, let alone after the first week or month. And a lot of the first phase of wrestling training is just weeding out the garbage who just want to get in the ring and play wrestler and don't want to pay their dues but want to talk about their entrance or their pyro or when they get a championship. Like, if that's your primary concern when you're stepping foot into a wrestling school, then you are in for a very rude awakening. So show up in shape.
I imagine you could probably identify those guys when you see them come in there, right? I mean, I don't know how, you know, going back to Tough Enough, when you walked in there, were you kind of able to look at it and go, yeah, these guys aren't really serious, and you could tell these guys are just here because they want to be, you know, they want just the chance to be in the ring and screw around, like you said?
Yes and no. I mean, sometimes guys will surprise you. Sometimes guys that just look like they're fresh off the couch could have, you know, just cardio for days, or, you know, they start eating better and taking care of themselves, and they could surprise you. But yeah, there are a couple of contestants on Tough Enough where I'm just like, what are you even doing here right now? You have no business being here.
Can't get you to name names, could we, AJ?
Sure. I mean, Miss America, Rima Faqih, she never had a day of training in her life, but, you know, she was a compelling character. She made for good reality television. So, you know, as far as wrestling goes, she never, you know, she was, you know, greener than grass, but she made for a compelling character for reality TV. So it's not like I can knock the producers for casting her as part of the show. It's just when it came to the in-ring stuff, you know, I just took a little bit of comfort in knowing that I have 5 years on her and she has, you know, no experience. Michelle, I don't remember her last name, but Michelle's another good example. She came in bragging about having 10 years of experience or something, but she was having trouble with her hammer lock. So it was just kind of like, okay, 10 years. Like, is that one match 10 years ago and then one match the week before you came to Tough Enough? Or, like, what did that 10 years look like? So, you know, Jeremiah, though, is a good example. Like, he didn't have a lick of wrestling training, but he came from the world of MMA and was, you know, an athlete and had a great look and a captivating personality. So, you know, he took to it like, you know, a fish to water. So it was interesting to see people who had no prior wrestling experience, how they took to it during Tough Enough.
So how much of that was a legitimate competition, and then how much of it was, obviously it's a television show, but what would you say the percentages is, a legitimate competition as opposed to just a television show?
Well, actually, it's funny you bring that up because, cheap plug for myself real quick, I was on Stone Cold Steve Austin's podcast earlier this week, and as one of the head trainers on Tough Enough, he and I were talking about that, and I know it's easy to bash reality TV when it's just blasted in your, you know, it's right there in your face. This is reality TV, so everything's 100% legit. But everything on Tough Enough, I would say, if we were to put a percentage on it, was probably 95% legit. You know, Steve was saying how he didn't get a whole lot of notes from the producers, and neither were the other trainers. They would just kind of say, we're just going to turn you guys loose. You guys do what you do. And we'll take it from there. So obviously the producers, the editors, they had the say in what they kept and what they left out and how they guided the story that eventually ended up on TV. But as far as what you're seeing and how legitimate that was, as far as just like legitimate reactions and unscripted, unrehearsed moments, about as close to legit as you can get for reality television.
That's interesting. That's higher than I expected you to say. Yeah. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah. just to plug it real quick, if you search Steve Austin Show, wherever you get your podcasts, my chat with him came out earlier this week on Tuesday is when it came out. So still super fresh, but he and I also dive real deep into Tough Enough, and It makes for good listening, especially on his end, just because he was the host, the head trainer. So he goes into the process with working with the producers and, you know, but again, they were quick to keep themselves from being hands-on. They just wanted to be like, you guys go ahead and do your thing.
So, AJ, talk a little bit about Hood Slam and what you guys have going on. I know you've got a big show coming up this weekend, but talk a little bit about your involvement and how you got involved with Hood Slam. Because for those that don't know, it's a very interesting company. So just tell the people a little bit that might not be familiar.
Right. If you're not acquainted with Hood Slam, I like to describe it as a party with pro wrestling. It's a 21 and over promotion. So there's a whole lot of swearing. There's a whole lot of drinking. There's a whole lot of other things going on that I don't necessarily need to get into on this in this interview. It's a lot of fun. Like, it's one of the slogans is "Don't bring your effing kid." So right off the bat, we're making it clear that it is for an adult audience. We do not take the guise of wrestling being athletic competition seriously. We throw that completely out the window. Like, yes, it still matters who wins and who loses, but we are not trying to convince anybody that what they're watching is genuine athletic competition. We are taking it in the exact opposite direction. Like, see, if Deadpool had a pro wrestling promotion, it would be Hood Slam. I think that's a good way to kind of sum it up. There is no fourth wall. You know, we just make We tell the most ridiculous stories we can. We have some of the most outlandish characters you've ever heard in your life. Like a good example is everybody's familiar with the Steiner brothers, right? WWE and WCW, an amazing tag team. At Hood Slam, our version of the Steiner brothers wrestle with blunts in their mouth, and we call them the Stoner brothers, Rick Scott and Scott Rick.
Nice.
Everybody's heard of Bugs Bunny, right? Cartoon legend.
Yeah.
Our little tribute to Bugs Bunny is a coke-addicted 1920s rabbit that comes to the ring and rubs his nose in a big bag of blow before he starts his match, and his name is Drugs Bunny. So you get an idea for the type of characters that are at Hood Slam. But like I said, it's a party. It takes place at a music venue. We have a live band that just kicked out some face-melting metal throughout the entire show. I've got a bottle of Jack that I'm like, I get in the ring and I do the Hulk Hogan ear, and then whoever's the loudest, I go to that side and give them all some shots of Jack straight out the bottle. Like, it is a party. And we do have a big show this Friday and every first Friday of the month at the Oakland Metro Opera House. If you want to pick up your, if you're in the area, you want to pick up tickets, you can. Depending on when this airs, though, you may not be able to get them online, but if you want to take your chances, just search for Hood Slam on Eventbrite.com. You can get them at the door at the Oakland Metro Opera House. Doors open at 8 o'clock. It starts at 9. It's over at about midnight. And you're going to want to start hydrating now because it is one hell of a party.
I'm looking at a poster right now as well that shows a couple guys dressed up as Ken and Ryu, I think, from Street Fighter.
Yep, we have a video game show, a video game theme show coming up on Friday, June the 15th. And so hopefully we have our like regularly scheduled show every first Friday of the month in Oakland, and that's where you'll get like the ongoing storylines and who's champion and all that stuff. And then throughout every like couple weeks, we'll do a mid-month show that has a theme. Like this past Sunday, we did a show in San Francisco that was our 90s night that featured like Neo and Trinity against the Godwins. So like 90s references aplenty, but also stuff for the wrestling fan too. You know, we had Beavis and Butthead against, who did they wrestle? I can't remember who Beavis and Butthead
wrestled. Ren and Stimpy, maybe?
We had nice. Raven against Barton Crow. We had Kano against, oh God, I don't know. I'm blanking. I don't know. They all start to blur together after a while. But the point is, you know, we have video game theme shows. We have horror movie theme shows. We have drag shows. You know, we like picking and choosing from like cosplay and video games and movies and music and 80s and 90s and just all this stuff. Because there is something for everybody at Hood Slam, as long as you're 21 and over.
So, hold on. You said a drag. So, you mean you're going to have, like, Tu Wong Fu versus RuPaul or something crazy like that?
No, like, the male Hood Slam roster will dress up as women, as, like, famous females from, you know, throughout history. Like, so my character at Hood Slam is Brosive Joe Brody, and typically I'm just a raging douchebag frat boy bro. And, you know, it's a complete caricature of the bro. Like, I'm the butt of all my own jokes. I'm an absolute buffoon when I'm out there. But the first year of our annual, I call it a drag show. It's not actually a drag show. It's Femmed Out is the name of the show. And really, there's no better way to describe it. It's you know, the male members of the roster, we get femmed out and we dress up as women. So, like, this past year, who was I? I was Christina Swagulera.
Nice.
The year prior, I was Tinker Bro. And the year prior to that, I was Little Bro Peep. And the year prior to that, I was Marilyn Monroe. So, still nice. Keeping the Brosive Joe Brody character, but just dressing up as a woman. And, you know, we had, like, one of the most spectacular gimmicks was we had five guys dress up as the Spice Girls. And, you know, the Spice nice. Girls were represented, all five of them, and the crowd went absolutely nuts for it. You know, some other popular characters are Xena, Madonna, Shakira, and, you know, it's all male. the male roster dressing up as women. And it's like, what's the big deal? You know what I mean? Like, we were a little bit skeptical the first year we did it because, you know, it's a drag show and that's not exactly the most well-received theme everywhere. But it turned out to be one of our most successful and most loved nights of the year.
Hey, man, I think I got a couple of ideas for next shows, man.
Oh,
I got a couple of ideas. Give me a second here. Work with me here. So, number one, I got a Bro of Arc. What you think about that one?
Okay. Okay. I got an idea.
Okay. Angelina or Brogelina Jolie.
Angelina
Broly.
Yeah. Brony Spears.
Scarlett Brohansson.
Nice, nice. Yeah, so nice. Well played, sir.
Thank you. I was gonna be Brozan, but something tells me that's no longer going to happen.
Too soon? Too soon?
Too soon.
Well, you can disappear forever. Like, we don't need to get too into it, but Roseanne, you can disappear forever. I don't think too many people would miss you.
How about not Roseanne, but how about Rosanna Arquette?
Okay, that can work.
Just giving you a couple of ideas. That's all.
Bro Stephanie McMahon. I'm going to combine them.
Nice. So what, are you one half your Shane, another half your Stephanie? Is that's what's going on there?
I don't know. We might make it a complete gender bender and just go back and forth and just do like half down the middle. I don't know. But see, that's the stuff we can get away with the Hood Slam. What sets Hood Slam apart from, I think, every other promotion that I've ever been a part of and every other promotion that I've seen is the limitless creativity. Because we acknowledge that pro wrestling is a performance art, it allows us to take that art and make it whatever we want it to be, and limited only by the creativity of the talent. And the talent in that locker room, it's probably the most talented locker room I've ever been a part of, not just for their in-ring work, but for their unbelievable creativity. And, you know, throughout the entire night, like, we're watching the whole show. If we're not out there actually, you know, either I'm doing the commentary or the wrestlers are in the ring, we're watching the entire show. And the boys are popping the entire time. Like, literally just, like, laughing their heads off and just loving every second of it. So if you can pop the locker room, the crowd's going to go crazy. And the crowd's actually one of the easiest crowds that we've ever had to work, because they're not your typical indie wrestling crowd. They're not going to sit on their hands and applaud after an exhausting 30-second choreographed spot. They're just people out looking for a good time on a Friday night, looking to drink and party and hang out. And so a hip toss will pop the crowd. So just imagine what a 450 would do. They come unglued. And Hood Slam's not...
Nice.
We're drawing almost 1,000 people every single month. Like, you know, your typical indie crowd is probably somewhere between 1 and 300 people. It's 1,000 people. They're liquored up. They're standing room only. There are no chairs, so it feels like a rock concert. There are no barricades around the ring, so they can literally get right up against the ring and pound on the side of the ring. It's like a fight club. It's like Fight Club with live music. It's like Fight Club and Rocky Horror Picture Show through wrestling. It's a jubilant madness. That's the best way I can describe it. It is a jubilant madness.
Well, you've done a hell of a job of hyping it up. I want to get out there to the West Coast and check out a show.
Well, thank you. I mean, and, you know, wherever you're listening to this, just hop on social media, hop on YouTube and check it out. If you plug Hood Slam into YouTube, you're going to find all kinds of stuff, highlight videos, full-length matches. And, you know, we're all over social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, as I said, and Twitch. We have entire shows that pop up on Twitch, and it's all at Hood Slam. So give us a like, give us a follow, check it out. You'll be glad you did.
So, AJ, before we let you get out of here, I got to ask you one thing. I got to ask you about your dating naked experience.
Hi, I had a feeling I was going to come up.
That's such an interesting idea.
Right. It's so simple, too. Like, who would have thought that, you know, we needed a dating show. How do we set it apart? I don't know, have him date naked. Sold. Genius.
And then, yeah, that guy, that young lady that came up with that, I'm sure they got a raise. So, yeah, so, okay, so they drop you guys off, they strip you your clothes, and you just hang out naked, Adam and Eve style, huh?
Yeah, that's not actually too far from what happened. You know, they flew us into Panama, which is where the show shot, and it was in June, so it was just absolutely beautiful. It was warm and just perfect outside. And, you know, when we got to the island, they filmed us from the moment we stepped off the boat, got on the island, and then it's like, okay, drop them. And that's when I got the most nervous because, there's like 20 people around. There's producers and camera operators and boom mic operators. And just, you know, it's like, okay, it looks like I'm really getting naked right now. And all that went away as soon as I saw the girl that was like the other lead contestant on the show. Because it's like, here's mine, there's yours, who cares? Like, what's the big deal? We're both naked. Like, how much more? This is the worst it's ever going to be. This is the most awkward it's ever going to be right now. And like 5 minutes after interacting with each other, it didn't even matter. Didn't even matter. So I'm actually like really.
Well, speaking of interacting, so what happens if you see a young lady that, you know, she's attractive and, you know, let's say what happens when your blood leaves your brain? Let's just say it like that. So you just walk around with no blood in your brain, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean that happens.
If you pick up my drift, yeah.
If you're just walking around with your own personal towel rack for a little while, that's all.
You just go to the bathroom, wash your hands, pick up the towel, put it back on, like, and just keep it moving.
Yeah, exactly.
Knocking over coconut trees.
Or worst case, just go to the bathroom, knock out a number three real quick, and just go about your business.
Touche.
Yeah. So was it just you and another and a woman, or is it a group of people?
It started out as just me. So I was the lead contestant as far as the guys go, and the girl I referred to, she was the lead contestant as far as the girls go. So the first date is her and I. And then the next day, it's me and another girl and her and another guy. And then that night, the four of us hang out. And then the following day, it's me and yet another girl and her and yet another guy. And that night, the six of us hang out. So, like, as the days went on, there were more and more people involved with the show. And then the following day, it was like, I pick whoever I had the best connection with. She picks whoever she had the best connection with. And we ended up picking each other, which was cool, but I didn't really think there were any sparks there. So, in my opinion, like, in all honesty, it wasn't really a choice. It was more like a lack of options.
I have the feeling that's kind of how most dating reality shows go, which you only have the handful to pick from anyway, so if it's, you know, you're basically choosing the less of the two evils.
Right, gotta pick somebody, so, I didn't hate you entirely, but, you, I guess.
There's a real pragmatic joke in there about that being most dating situations, whether on reality shows or in real life, but I'm not gonna go there. there's something there, but I'm not going to go there.
Different can of worms.
I'm waiting.
It's
for...
actually kind of a cool concept, though, because I mean, you literally strip all your inhibitions away, and I don't know. I think there's, you don't have any pretense. You don't have anywhere to hide. Like, it's just, this is me. It's actually kind of a cool concept.
That was the point. Like, I think that's one of the reasons why I'm just like, you know, everybody is taught to be so ashamed of what they have between their legs when really, you know, it's not really a surprise. You know, it's either, you know, unique circumstances aside, it's either a penis or it's a vagina. What's the big deal? Everybody has some semblance of one or the other. So I don't think there's really a reason to act like it's some deep, dark secret that we can't, you know, that we can't talk about or can't show somebody. Like, eventually somebody's going to see it. That's the idea, right? Eventually somebody's going to see it.
Hopefully, yeah. I mean, and all of you gentlemen out there, you hang in there, sport. There's somebody that's going to see yours eventually, okay?
Right. Just make sure it gets some air every now and then. If you don't use it, you lose it, so...
Touché. Sometimes you got to take it out and, you know, take it for a test drive, you know?
Make sure.
Exactly.
Yeah, make sure everything still runs.
Well acquainted.
Yeah. Change the oil now and then.
Hey, AJ, man, why don't you let the good people know where they can find you, man? And again, pump the Hood Slam show, man. Let everybody know where they can see it, how they can get tickets, all that good stuff.
So, Hood Slam, Friday, June the 1st at the Oakland Metro Opera House. Remember, it's 21 and over. Don't bring your effing kids. Tickets available on Eventbrite.com or at the door at 8 o'clock at the Oakland Metro Opera House. But not only, though, is Hood Slam doing this huge show. Every first Friday in Oakland, it's a huge show, but Hood Slam is actually coming back to Vegas for the first time in, like, God, I mean, it's been years. It's been maybe 4 or 5 years since Hood Slam was anywhere near Vegas. And we're teaming up with Freak Show Wrestling for what is going to be an unforgettable. You are not going to be able to forget what happened on this night, no matter how hard you try. Like, between Freak Show Wrestling and Hood Slam, and we're putting together this mega event called Freak Slam on Saturday, June 23rd at the Fremont Country Club. Like, I was talking about the creativity in the Hood Slam locker room. I feel like it's equally matched with Finn Bodie and Freak Show Wrestling. Like, he's got some of the most, like, staggering gimmicks that I've ever seen in my life. Like, he's got Black Annie. He's got Gay Dolph Hitler. he's just got...
Hold on.
Do yourself a favor.
Gadolf Hitler.
He comes to the ring with Legion of Doom pads, but they're not spikes. They're dildos, and they're all pink. And like, but he looks like Hitler. He looks just like Hitler.
Oh my God!
It's pretty spectacular.
I just image searched it. Oh my God!
Yeah.
Wow.
So between the characters at Hood Slam and the characters at Freak Show Wrestling, it's going to be an amazing night. So if you are in or anywhere near Vegas, carve out Saturday, June 23rd. Get your ass to the Fremont Country Club in Vegas for Freak Slam. It's going to blow your mind. And I think tickets are available on Eventbrite.com for Freak Slam as well. And I'm just going out on a limb here, but I'm willing to bet it's going to be 21 and over. So... but yeah, you've got Hood Slam in Oakland every first Friday and occasionally, theme shows popping up. You've got Freak Slam in Vegas on the 23rd, Saturday at the Fremont Country Club. So be sure to follow Hood Slam and Freak Show Wrestling on all things social media. For me, you can find me on Facebook. It's AJ Kirsch, K-I-R-S-C-H. You can like my page. You can add me as a friend. I accept all friend requests. Twitter and Instagram, both at AJ Kirsch. And then I also have separate social media for Brosif because I like keeping some separation there because this is real. It's wrestling people. It's 100% real. This isn't that fake MMA shit. This is 100% real. So Brosif you can find on Facebook at facebook.com/BrosifJoeBrody. Brosif is spelled like Joseph. And then Twitter and Instagram at BroJBrody. And by the way, if you're getting like bent out of shape that is just called MMA fake and wrestling real, then you don't quite get the tongue-in-cheek humor of Hood Slam, of Freak Show Wrestling. But I still encourage you to check out a show because I guarantee you, you're going to have a good time.
So, as Brosif, can you tell me how great Nickelback is?
Nickelback blow your fucking mind, bro. Nickelback is the greatest anything in the history of everything, and I want them playing at my funeral. I'm going to hire Nickelback to play at my funeral to lower me into the ground, bro, because Nickelback is the greatest band that ever played. So give me that Led Zeppelin shit. I don't give a shit about the Beatles. It's all about Nickelback, and everybody knows and likes at least one Nickelback song, and if you tell me you don't, I'm going to call you a fucking liar, bro.
I'm Brosif Joe Brody, bro. I hail from the highest peak of Mount Brolympus. I'm the voice of Hood Slam in Brooklyn, California, and I am guaranteed to bro your mind.
Check it out, bro. If $7 Productions wants a true professional with an extensive vocabulary such as myself, then you're looking at your 2016 Rock the Promo Champion, bro.
And hey, bro,
This won't be the first time The Rock declared me the winner of a promo contest, bro.
But hey, I'm not beneath bribery, bro. I'll show up to your door with a dozen broses, a carton of protein powder, we'll hit the gym, enjoy a romantic dinner for two, and when I'm crowned the 2016 Rock the Promo Champion, it's gonna be an explosion of epic proportions.
Did I just bro your mind?